All right, so a couple weeks ago, I promised to finish this study up, so that's what we're going to do today. But we were discussing the topic of, can a Christian socially drink alcohol? And just a way of quick review, I know it's been a few weeks since we last looked at this, but we discussed how we first began by defining some of the terms. To understand the terms that are important in this discussion, we look specifically at the word oinos, which is the Greek term. It's used 32 times in the New Testament. It is always, I believe, translated wine. And what kind of the word complicates sometimes the understanding is that word can refer to either unfermented, non-alcoholic, grape juice, or it can refer to alcoholic, fermented. And the only way to really understand whether it's referring to fermented or unfermented, you have to look at the context going on around it. And the context defines which way it should be defined or understood. We also looked at the words for drunk and drunkard. Along with that, we discussed how, defined how the Bible clearly states that drunkenness is a sin. Over and over again in the New Testament, it is reiterated that to be drunk is to sin. We also looked at the Old Testament view of alcohol, just to kind of get a frame of reference. Specifically at the Proverbs that Solomon wrote about the dangers of strong drink. Particularly, we looked at Proverbs 20, verse 1, where the psalmist writes, "Wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise." And then we went through a few others along that line as well. And that's kind of where we left off. I think we got into John chapter 2. That's where we're going to begin our study today. I'm sorry if I'm going to go back over some ground we've already covered, but it's been a little while, and I couldn't remember exactly where we left off. So any questions, though, about anything up to this point? And I'll attempt to answer as best I can. So in this discussion, one of the things we pointed out as we set the framework. We know that drunkenness is a sin. There's no doubt about it. The New Testament is very clear about it. We looked at several passages and could have probably looked at more that deal with that topic, but there is no doubt the New Testament teaches that's a sin. So those who try to defend socially drinking alcohol, those who want to pursue that, in order to, the debate comes in, is somewhere they say between no drinks and drunkenness, you're okay. Does that make sense? So that's the groundwork we're playing on. Now we did notice in Ephesians 5:18, the word there for to get drunk refers to the process of becoming drunk, and so that even tightens your window down even more. At what point are you on the process of being drunk? Now that's also difficult because not everybody's built the same. Some people get drunk before others. Some people it takes just very little alcohol. Others maybe a little bit more, and so really makes this even more difficult, I believe. So, with that in mind, let's look at a couple passages that are used to defend the use of alcohol in a social setting. Let's go to John chapter 2, and let's read a couple of verses here. A little bit lengthier passage. Let's read verses 1 through 11. And I would get someone to read. I'd love that, but those who are online can't hear you. And so hopefully soon we'll have microphones and auditorium where we can do that more often. I would prefer that because I know y'all get sick of hearing me talk. but I have to read this one. So John chapter 2, beginning at verse 1. On the third day, there was a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus also was invited to the wedding with his disciples. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour is not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were six stone jars, water jars, there for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Draw some out and take it to the master of the feast." So they took it. When the master of the feast tasted the water, now become wine, and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master of the feast called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and when people have drunk freely," or some translations will have "drunk well," then the poor wine. "But you have kept the good wine until now." This, the first of his signs, Jesus did at Cana in Galilee, and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. So you have this scenario where Jesus and his disciples are attending this wedding feast. And just to give a little history here, wedding feast in the Jewish culture. When we have a wedding, how long does it take? It's usually done on an afternoon, a Saturday or Sunday, maybe an evening. But it's usually held within, what, a couple hours at most? If you get beyond 2-3 hours, then you really, you're throwing a real big shindig, right? And we all know weddings can be very expensive. And so I'm sure the parents aren't wanting to spend more money than they have to. But typically, weddings aren't real long affairs. Well, in Jewish customs, that's not the case. They were much longer. They would go across maybe a week of celebration when families would gather, they'd celebrate. And so when you think about covering that amount of time, food and beverage, you know, you'd need, you know, some considerable sums of that, along with all the other things they would do. And so you've got a situation here where this couple's getting married, the families have invited all these people, and they've run out of wine. Now, again, that word for wine in the context is the oinos word. Again, that word that can be translated either way. The only way we know what it refers to is by looking at the context. Only the context can tell us what is truly meant. And so they run out, and you have this conversation with Jesus and his mother. She wants him to fix the problem. And so they get the six stone jars. Now, we give an idea of how big these are. These aren't little jars just around the house. These aren't even pitchers that you keep in your house to make sweet tea or unsweet or lemonade or something. These are big basin jars that can hold between 20 and 30 gallons of water. Now, it tells us what their purpose intentionally is for purification, purifications in regard to making someone clean spiritually. Before God. But Jesus says he wants those filled up. So what are we looking at? How much water are they gathering together? Yeah, so even if you go with a low amount here, let's say 20 gallons, let's just go with a low amount. How much? So you've got how many? You got six jars times 20. What is that? 180, right? Now, what's that? I'm sorry, 120. I'm sorry, my math is not good there. 120 up to 180 here of water. So that's a large amount. But you also had probably a large amount of people. And then, of course, Jesus turns that water to wine. So some will say, come to this passage and see, here's Jesus obviously participating in people drinking wine. So therefore, socially drinking, they're a social occasion. So Jesus must be perfectly okay with social drinking. Well, what is that? What's going on here? Let's think about the context. And is he really considering fermented or unfermented wine? Notice a few clues. Number one, we've looked at the amount that's there. That's a lot of wine. Now, if that's fermented alcoholic wine, that's a lot of wine. And then you also notice a very important clue in verse number 10. When the master of the feast comes after tasting the wine and seeing that it's good, comes and says, what's the normal process when it comes to a wedding feast and wine? Why would you serve the best first? And so he says, you serve that good one first. Well, as Jody said, you know, because as you drink more of it, your taste, you know, to whatever you're drinking kind of becomes more and more bland. And so you can start serving the less tasty as you go on. However, he notices the difference in what's given here is that it tastes like new wine. It tastes like that very fresh wine, the very best, because he says, you've held off the best for the last. That's unusual. And he also notices, he describes the people as being well drunk. Now, of course, here, he's not talking about drunk with alcohol. He's just talking about these people have drunk a lot of it. Now, if it is alcoholic wine, you could also say that would definitely mean they are well drunk. You've got a real party going on at this point. So to claim that this is alcoholic wine from the context, you would have to say that Jesus is participating in people getting well drunk, which I think belies the New Testament. As we've already looked, drunkenness is clearly a sin. So I think it clearly indicates here that what's going on is not alcoholic wine under consideration. This is non-alcoholic, more akin to juice, which was the drink of their choice of the day, and not alcoholic. Yes, sir. So just to repeat back for those online who can't hear Jody, what he made mention of is that when they made wine in the day, the custom was not to make alcoholic wine. It was to make regular drink that they would utilize day to day. And also there's an indicator there when they say you saved the good wine or the new wine for now. Again, the most tasty wine, the most tasty juice would be the most fresh, and over time the freshness of the wine would change. And they also had ways, and this is a misnomer by some, to prevent fermentation. They had several different ways. And, I didn't write these down. I wish I had. But there were several ways that could prevent wine, juice, from fermenting. They would do certain things to it to prevent that. So it wasn't like they didn't have the capability of preventing that from occurring. Also, I want to make note too, I don't know if you're like me, and maybe you're not, but whenever I hear the word wine, I automatically think of alcoholic wine. And so one of the difficulties in any of these situations is to get our mindset out of that, because that's not the way they looked at it. Because typically, we never refer to juice as wine, yet that's the way they referred to it, whether it was fermented or unfermented. So again, that goes back to context. Any other questions or comments about it? Y'all gonna be quiet on me? Either that or I answered all your questions, which I doubt. All right, so that's one of the passages that I often use. I think that one, that's actually a poor example. Just from the context, it's really quite clear that it couldn't have been what they say it is. So let's look at a different passage. Let's go to Luke 33 through 39. Go turn your Bibles to Luke 33, 5:33. Luke 5:33. In Luke 5 and verse 33, we'll begin there. And this is another passage that has been brought up in regard to the social drinking thing. And I want to take a moment just to examine it and to see, is it really referring to the idea of it being something that the Bible endorses, social drinking? So let's look. Beginning verse 33. And they said to him, said to Jesus, the disciples of John fast often and offer prayers, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees. But yours eat and drink. And Jesus said to them, can you make wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them? The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast in those days. He also told them a parable. No one tears a piece from a new garment and puts it on an old garment. If he does, he will tear the new, and the piece from the new will not match the old. And no one puts new wine in old wine skins. If he does, the new wine will burst the skins, and it will be spilled, and the skins will be destroyed. But the new wine must be put into fresh wine skins. And no one, after drinking old wine, desires new, for he says the old is good. All right. So some will come to this, and they'll look at that last verse, in verse 39, and they'll say, see, here's Jesus endorsing alcoholic drink when he makes a statement, the old is good. All right. So before we get into answering that question, let's again look at the context. What's going on here? What's the point of that passage? Y'all can't make me talk the whole time. So I got to preach after this, so I need a little bit of breath. Okay, he's laying the groundwork for the kingdom, for his death, burial, and resurrection. Because what's really under debate here? What's being debated? Alcoholic wine? Does that really have anything to do with the context? All right, so number one, I want to note that to pull that out as a discussion about socially drinking would defy the context of the situation altogether. So again, understand that what's being under discussion has nothing to do with social drinking. I want that to be noted first. The real discussion here is about Jesus' messiahship, about what his purpose is. And because it begins by a comparison of Jews between Jesus' disciples and those of the Pharisees and of and of John the Immerser. And what's the comparison being made? Yours are less holy. Why? Yeah, so they're looking at his disciples. They see a difference. They know the difference. And then they say, the implication seems to be that your disciples are not behaving properly as a good spiritual person should, as a good disciple of a biblical teacher should. Jesus then goes on to explain why his act differently than the others. And he makes the point of, he looks at a wedding here, and he says what? He says, when the wedding is going on, is anybody going around mourning and in deep contemplation? What do we do at weddings? What are weddings for? What's the purpose of a wedding? It's a celebration of a marriage, of the union of two people. It should act like a celebration. You walk into a wedding and it's more like a funeral. We got some big questions, don't we? Who in here would like to have their wedding, or would have liked to have had a wedding like that? That's not what you put a wedding on. That's not why you invest big money into all the things that surround a wedding. You invest the big money, you invest the time and effort into a celebration. You want it to be a festive, fun time. Well, what's Jesus' point is, the disciples have me right now, and so they need to act like that. They don't need to be in mourning for me. I'm still here with them. And so they need to be excited and energetic and zealous. And he says there will be a time for that, but it's not right now. It's not right now. He's comparing his relationship with his disciples more like that wedding than like a funeral. And let's see. And then he gives two parables. Okay, the first one is about garments. Now, how many people in here are like me and have some jeans with some holes in them? All right, I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but I'm sure about every guy in here has work clothes. Got a few holes in them, but you like them because why? They fit just right. They feel comfortable. But now, you like those jeans, but would you go and buy a new pair of clothes and start cutting those new pants up in order to patch the old? Now, some of you might. You might really like those old jeans. But typically, we go and buy new clothes. We don't want to go and cut them up to fix old clothes. Just wear the new ones, and we'll let them wear. And we'll what's the wear on them? It's like going, let's say you have a vehicle, and let's say the fan belt breaks on it, and you need a new fan belt. Well, you wouldn't go out and buy a new car, take the fan belt off that car, and put it on the old one, would you? That seems ridiculous. And so he first gives that example. You know, when you have something new, you celebrate the new, and the old kind of gets put away. When you buy new clothes, the old clothes become the work clothes. And so it goes. And so that's his first. Of course, the point there is he's bringing something new. You celebrate the new, not the old, right? The new hasn't come to patch the old. It's new. And then he gives the example of the new and old wine skins. Which is more valuable, old or new wine juice? Which will be more valuable, the old juice that you've had forever? Now, I know my understanding is people celebrate old wine more than new. But the same goes as with the clothing. If you go out and you buy, We've got some steaks in our refrigerator that I forgot left them out on the counter overnight. I don't throw out a little too quickly. Now if we go and buy, which would be more valuable? Let's say we go out and buy some new steaks and we properly freeze them as we should. Which would be more valuable, those old steaks that we left out on the counter or the new ones? You see, I don't even talk. New, right? Then more valuable. The same is with the juice, because what happens to juice or any kind of drink over time? It gets old. Anybody ever gotten a flat drink? Man, that's one of my biggest pet peeves. You go to a fast food place, and you've been looking forward, maybe thinking about that drink, whatever, that sweet tea, or this happens a lot more with sodas, but you go through the line, and you wait your turn, you're getting that drink, whatever it is, and you get it, it's flat. Ugh! There's nothing more disgusting, and I'll tell you this, Taco Bell is the worst for that. Either it's flat, or it is watered down, and I hate that. It just disgusts me. Almost ruins my lunch. But the new is more valuable, and so you get that new wine. His point is, you don't go and then stick it in old wineskins. You make new wineskins, and you put it in there. Because those old wineskins, what happens over time? They begin to deteriorate. And there's a chance those old wineskins could burst, and then you lose all the new. Then what good is that? And so she says, you put it in new wineskins. Again, what's his point? What's he trying to illustrate? New's better, but what specifically is he pointing to? The new covenant. His new way. His gospel is better than the law of Moses. Go read the book of Hebrews. The book of Hebrews spends a lot of time looking at why Jesus is better than the old. And that's the point of Jesus here. What I'm reading to you is better. And I'm showing you a better way. Why would you go back to the old customs when I'm showing you something better? It's like in regard to circumcision, which became a big problem with the New Testament church in the relationship between Jewish Christians and Gentile Christians. And Jewish Christians tried to push on Gentile Christians that they needed to be circumcised. What were they doing? They were trying to take the old customs and force it upon the Gentiles. And Paul, in the book of Galatians and in the book of Romans, points out to them, you're forcing something old on them. That doesn't belong on them. Don't do that. And I believe that's Jesus' point here. And so when he gets to that statement in verse 39, and no one after drinking old wine desires new, for he says the old is good. What's his point? If you've got wine already, or juice, and you still have a supply of it, why would you go buy more? I mean, you've got some there. And so his point is, you don't go out and buy if the old is good. What's the problem, though? If your old way is perfect, your old way of serving God can make you righteous, then why a new way? What's his point, though? It's actually counter to the ideal of the statement made. His way is better. This is better than the old. It wasn't working in regard to salvation. It could not bring forgiveness of sins. Go read Hebrews chapter 10, verses 1 through 4. For it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to forgive sins. Yet in Jesus, all sins can be washed away through his blood. 1 John 1 and verse 7 through 9. And so the new way is actually better. And so I believe the statement he makes in verse 39 is actually counter to the idea that's being proposed. All right, so I believe this has nothing, again, to do with social drinking. I think it's not a good point to bring up. I think you're grabbing for straws in order to convince yourself that it's just okay from this passage. Any questions or comments? All right. I covered that one thoroughly, too. You are all good. I may get some comments online, questions. I can't see those right now, though. But, all right, so we looked at the passage, and I won't get into detail about it. The passage also is brought up often. 1 Timothy 5:23, when Jesus says to Timothy, 1 Timothy 5, verse 23, no longer drink water only, but use a little wine for the sake of your stomach and for your frequent ailments. And we discussed that about how there are a couple important things to point out here. Number one, this is not social drinking, it's medicinal use. So it's a very different situation. Number two, you also notice the wine is watered down wine, even if it is alcoholic wine that he's under discussion. It's a watered down variety. Number two, says the amount is to be, he actually defines the amount that you're to use, which is little. Not just consume as much as you want, but use a little wine. The other point that I would note here is, why is Paul even having to encourage Timothy to do that if social drinking is okay? Why does Timothy even have an issue with having to be convinced about it? And so I think there are a couple points there. And then number three is, there's a mistaken idea. For a while, I know some doctors will prescribe a little wine for people for cholesterol use, to get your cholesterol down. But what's been discovered is grape juice actually has the same properties as wine does. You can get the same values out of that as you do the alcohol. And plus there's drugs that you can use. Things like Crestor. What are some others, Lisa? What? Fish oil. Yeah. So, again, I think that the whole context belies the point of social drinking. Any questions or comments about any of those before I move on to the last section here? All right. You can't go out and badmouth me in the car on the way home unless you ask your question now. Okay. Just kidding. You can do that if you want to. But let's go to the last thing here. And I think this is important. So, again, the argument is somewhere between no drinks and being drunk is under discussion. And so some will come to this topic and think of it that way. The last thing I want to consider in that regard is our influence. So what we're really discussing here is social drinking. And so along those lines, not only do we have to discuss what the Bible has to say about the topic itself, is the effect of it, and the effect on our example to others. In 1 Thessalonians 5:22, we've looked at this passage in the past, but there Paul, as he is ending or summing up his bringing his letter to the Thessalonians to close, he says in verse 22, abstain from every form of evil. And I believe what's under context here is not only just sin, but even those things which could be viewed as evil. And I'll explain kind of what I mean by that as we go on. But again, what's the overlying principle of the Christian? We need to avoid even the... Go ahead. Yeah, exactly. So we want to avoid even the appearance of evil. We need to be as upright as we can be. Let's go to, that's to both those inside the church, those who are Christians, and those outside the church. Let's go to Romans 14:21. Romans 14:21. Paul says here in writing in Romans 14:21, it is not good to eat meat or drink wine, oinos, or do anything that causes your brother to stumble. That's a pretty broad principle, isn't it? Paul's telling us that we need to do everything in our power to avoid harming someone else by our actions, if at all possible. We need to think about those that we attend services with, those that we are brothers and sisters with, and what we're doing. Of course, now, what he's been under discussion, he'll do it here in Romans and 1 Corinthians, is the meat sacrificed to idols. And so he says we need to be careful of our influence, not to do anything that causes our brother to stumble. And so one of the principles that undergird our activities is our influence on those inside the church and those outside. Let's consider our influence on those outside the church. I go to Titus chapter 2. And I'm moving through these because we're running out of time. But if you have a question, just raise your hand and I'll try to deal with it. Titus chapter 2, and I'm not going to read the whole section just for time's sake, but I want to point out a couple of things. So Paul is writing to Titus about some important encouragements and exhortations to different members of the local congregation. And the first group he points to are older men. You notice what he says to older men. They are to be sober-minded. Well, what's that idea of soberness? That's a mind that is clear in its thinking, but it's also one that's free from intoxicating influences, anything that would cause the mind to lack clarity. One of those things, of course, would be alcohol. He says directly in verse number 3 to older women that they are not to be slaves to much wine. He goes on, he talks about several other things, and I just want to point out at the end of verse 5, he says, why are they not to be slaves to wine? That the word of God may not be reviled. Again, that idea of influence. Why are they not to be slaves to wine? Why are they not to be drunkards? Well, we've looked at being a drunkard as a sin, number one. But there's a second thing to that, is that the word of God may not be reviled. He doesn't want people outside the church to look at Christians and say, well, look at them. They preach righteousness and doing right, and look at it. They're out here drunk on the street corners. I'm not going to go to a church where I'm not going to be a part of a religion that's hypocritical. And so he says to older women, do not be slaves to wine. Go to, if you will, 1 Thessalonians 5, 5 through 8. And Paul again speaking to Thessalonians a little earlier in the chapter we read a few minutes ago in verse 22. Let's back up to verse 5. For you are all children of light, children of the day. We are not of the night nor of the darkness. And of course, that's a comparison between righteousness of God versus the sin of the world. We are not to live in the sin of the world. We're not to look like the sin in the world. We are to be different. We're to be light, children of the day. We should seem different to people. People should notice a difference in us. When our co-workers are going out to the bar to consume alcohol, we should be noted as being different, living differently than that. Not because we're better, not because we're more holy or anything like that, but because we're trying to live differently. hopefully through that influence, they're going to be interested and say, you behave differently. Can you tell me why? And then we go on to talk about the gospel and how it's changed us. Now it's caused us to think differently about things. He goes on in verse 6, 1 Thessalonians 5. So then let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober. But those who sleep, sleep at night. And those who get drunk are drunk at night. So he's bringing in that idea of being drunk, of consuming alcohol like that, as a thing of the night. And so then he, verse 8, he says, let us be sober. Let us live differently. And then I just want to end with this, and I'll say this real quick and we'll close. But Romans 12, 1 and 2, what does Paul say to us? Romans 12, 1 and 2. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual sacrifice. Do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing, or by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Being a living sacrifice. And that means sacrificing some of our wants. You may really enjoy the taste of alcohol, the way it makes you feel. But what should be our greater desire? Serving God. And so what are we willing? Are we holding anything back from God in devoting ourselves to Him? Thank you so much. As I mentioned, Patrick will be back next week, and we'll look forward to that study on unity. Thank you.